This is how legends are made. Legendary.
There's so many legends in this building today.
Legendary. Well, welcome back to Legendary, the I Lived It podcast, and we are so thrilled. I have friends today. We thought we would just sit around and get acquainted with you. You know, I've shared some of my experiences, shared some experiences with some legends, and around this table are legends in my eyes. These are people that I look up to, I call friends. We've done a ton of things together, have stories to share, and a lot of industry experience. You have artist experience, you have industry experience, you have production experience, you have radio experience, business experience, all represented in this wonderful group of people. And I want you to get to know them. So I'll start over here with Raymond.
Hello, hello.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Raymond?
Hey, guys. Well, I'm Raymond Boyd. Great to see everyone. I'm so glad to be here. Well, I actually met Kevin a long time ago at Christ for the Nation. So I grew up in Hampton, Norfolk, Virginia Beach area. Then I moved to Dallas. And then that's actually where I met Kevin. Well, actually, we think we met when we were 16.
Right. It actually goes back even further.
Right.
But I at least at a minimum, I heard your music. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
Back, it was in the Stone Age.
Yes.
80, 70 something.
Right, exactly.
But yes, my youth pastor knew your youth pastor.
That's right.
You were in Virginia. I have a good memory.
Wow.
And our his, band. Your band.
Right. All right. Went to North Carolina.
And played for the youth group.
Correct.
Of the other youth pastor. And our group attended. And I had heard about you because your youth pastors, actually, he played drums for Barbara Mandrell.
Barbara Mandrell, that's right. Golly, huh. Bringing it back. Hey, it's all coming back.
This is the sign in silence. The giving of wisdom.
That's right.
I'm just dishing it out today.
So okay, then we re-met then.
Yes.
Whenever I went to Christ for the Nations in Dallas.
Yep.
And
which is the Bible college. For those of you out there, there's a Bible college in Dallas that was known for worship music that I attended.
Right.
He attended.
So, Kevin and Denise, you guys just had Kevin at that point. Denise was pregnant with Joe. So, that's how far back I go with the family. So
that would be 33 years.
Right. Then after that, I went to Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. Make a long story short, I ended up playing for a Christian artist named Michael W. Smith.
Salute, Michael. We love you.
M-Dub, love you, man. and then I started playing drums and keyboards for Michael. And then a few years in, I started actually doing writing and song production.
Hold pause.
Pause.
For those of you that don't know who Michael W. Smith is, you should go look up Michael W. Smith.
Yeah.
He was one of People Magazine's sexiest people, so there's that.
Yeah.
But on top of that, right?
Yeah, about like 93, 94.
Yeah. And in that season.
That's right.
But one of the greatest singer, songwriters, musicians in the history of Christian music and beyond.
Right.
He was like a staple at AC Radio. So when this guy started playing with Michael W. Smith, it was like...
He was legendary.
It was legendary. We decided, by the way, to take the word legend and dairy, since we need some dairy in our lives, and put the two together. We did that for you guys.
Well, okay, I was playing with Michael, started moving into songwriting and production, and then got a really cool opportunity to write a song with Michael. Thank God. Such a huge opportunity. But I didn't really feel my songwriting skills were up to snuff, and I quickly felt that I was in over my head. So what do? I called Kevin Jonas, who I had learned songwriting from at Christ for the Nations, because he taught a really cool songwriting class.
We had fun in that class.
That's right. It was awesome. So I called Kevin, and he said, sure. So then, actually, he happened to be coming through Nashville. So we got together at my house. I played him the track or the beat, as you would call it today.
And yeah, so, let and me we pause.
Yeah,
Michael
pause.
W. Smith didn't write lyrics. I mean, he may have written some in his career, but as a rule, right. He did the music. He scattered over the scattered the melodies over this music. It was a fully produced track
right.
with his vocal. And Raymond said, let's work together. I said, give me the night. Because it was too big an opportunity.
Right. So then we started working on it. And then the first lyric Kevin wrote was, and I remember it to this day, said it sad, said it was a shame. I bet you thought I caught a boat to Bombay. On the line, just to let you know, I will be around.
Come on.
That's right.
Which was all about surviving. You might think I've disappeared.
I'm exactly. I'm back, baby.
It's kind of
apropos to this.
It is.
That's right.
We're back. Yeah.
We're back. Exactly.
You thought you lost me.
So anyway, we finished that lyric. We tracked the song. It goes on the project, ends up going gold.
The project.
The project ends up going gold.
That was my first gold record.
Yeah, mine too.
Yep.
So I continued to write and produce. By the grace of God, ended up getting 3 different Grammys along the way.
Just 3.
That's right. And then in 2004, Kevin called me and said, hey, the boys just got signed to Sony. Would you like to come up to New York to do some writing with us for the project? I said, yes. I said, absolutely. And so on that trip is when we wrote When You Look Me in the Eyes. That went on the project. So.
Just When You Look Me in the Eyes.
That's right.
Not bad to have one of the great singles. I'm so proud of that song. And last night we were at the concert. And when that song comes on, I just turn around, I just look at the crowd, and it just...
People have gotten married to that song. People have gotten engaged to that song.
It's amazing.
They love it, and it's just been an honor to have just a little piece of it.
You've been a part of so many musical moments and helped me and manage some talent with me. And it's been a fun journey, so we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely.
Let's go here. One of my favorites, one of my daughters of the heart. So everybody, welcome Olivia Summerlin.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. Oh my goodness. Okay, well, it's where to begin? So I met Kevin first and foremost as a Jonas Brothers fan. So after the show, we ended up, craziest thing, we were at the same restaurant and we were sitting at this table and your whole family walks in and sits at the table
after the show,
right next to us. Yes, after going to one of your shows at a venue that I ended up years later opening for the boys at this very same venue.
Yeah.
That was one of the coolest things of all time for me.
It was great.
But so became friends. I was an aspiring musician, you know, at the time, and never mentioned anything to you guys about it because
I had no idea she did music.
You don't want to be like that person. I don't know. I didn't want
to
be.
Well, you took that to impose. Extra lengths, like
keeping it a secret.
You know, we are in music and became really good friends with your family, and had no idea you did music
until one day I ran into Kevin at the other Kevin at Henson Studios. And that's the studio where I ended up working with Nick, writing a song with him that he produced, which is so funny. I just realized that connection.
Which was a number one hit.
Yes. Yes. It all came very full circle. But so Kevin, the other Kevin saw me, you know, what are you doing here? The truth came out. And then this Kevin was, you know, gracious enough to take interest in, you know, want to listen to what I was working on.
Well, I walked you invited me to a rehearsal studio to hear some of your music, and I walked in, and it was like, well, how did I not know about this? You're amazing. Similar to your reaction when you saw her, like, he was like,
oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, thank you.
She's a headliner.
Yeah, where's she been?
Oh. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I've had so much fun as the opening act, you know, I have to say, touring with the Jonas Brothers, Big Time Rush, Victoria Justice, Jessie J, Meghan Trainor. So, and that was, you know, across the US, UK, Latin, South America, Europe. So obviously those are the best times. So I'm glad that the, you know, enjoyment that I have for touring translates. So thank you.
It's incredible.
So I guess that is, well, the other thing I'll say that I always like to touch on is that I, throughout that and while I was touring, I was able to finish my degree from UC Berkeley in economics, which I think is relevant because I always like to throw that in.
There are tons of artists that have an econ degree.
Well, I like to say that because
from UC Berkeley, it's all my artists have that.
I didn't know. But I like to say it just because I think it's, you know, you know, many people were like, why would you get a degree and why would you go to college, period, if you have like, a, you know, a music career that's taking up all of your time, and why a degree in economics? But, you know, I always say the music industry is a business like any other. And so economics applies to that as well as anything else.
Yeah. And now we're business partners.
And now I mean, we are.
We're developing tons of projects together. And on top of that, amazing singer, amazing songwriter, incredible live performer. And as I said, a daughter of the heart. So we're going to move over to this direction.
I'm sitting here wondering why I was invited to join this
group.
We've got three Grammys over here. We have a number one, a student. And then there's the two of us, George.
Just wait till they start talking.
Oh, just wait.
Actually, mine was not on the music side. Initially, I'm not a musician. I aspired at one point early on in my career to pursue that, but that was not what the Lord had intended for me, we'll just say. And I was not a fan because I, too, was somewhat before the Jonas Brothers became the Jonas Brothers that we all know them to be today. I was actually introduced by way of, I was at the Disney Company at the time. Was transitioning into a number of roles after having been in the radio business and the record business for a number of years, always enjoying to be part of the beginning of a story, always the developing artist, always supporting those who, if I had done it my way, maybe I would have pursued it in that way. But I was actually introduced to your boys through Robin Jones.
At the time,
Ran was the head of programming and an on-air personality at Radio Disney.
And a lifetime friend, love her. Yeah. She was absolutely instrumental in those early days.
Amazing woman who I befriended as we at the time I was at Walt Disney World doing a multitude of things. Running talent relations and had some oversight for the Radio Disney Studio, which was broadcasting at the Disney MGM Studios at the time. And always seeking new developing artists that weren't born of the Disney system, I was introduced to your boys. Who'd made their way through Dallas, where Radio Disney was actually headquartered at the time, introduced to them. And as they say, the rest is sort of history. Started to engage with you, the boys, and Denise, bringing you to a number of different events and opportunities. Mm-hmm. At that stage in their career, where it was still a Disney fam of individuals that were being groomed and nurtured through the Disney Channel and other outlets at the company. And that would lead to a continued relationship that developed even further when I moved to Burbank to work for the Walt Disney Records business, where we brought about even more opportunities, some songs that your boys may not even... I won't say they won't remember. They certainly will remember. They probably can't live it down. Some of the early Disney Mania tracks that still probably haunt them. And yet through a series of you know, you couldn't script it. I do genuinely believe a God thing, but that brought us together. Many opportunities later, getting to know one another better, to spend a lot of time together throughout that time, and some evolution of being part of different projects, and my path leading to other things as well. And there was a point in time that we contemplated that there was an opportunity that we would work together back when you were still at the A&M.
That's right. The A&M offices at Henson.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And we tried to woo him from Disney.
It just
wasn't the right timing.
Yeah,
but now it is.
It was not the right time. And
this wonderful gentleman now runs our entertainment company, and couldn't be happier to have him now as a part. Tell us a few of the artists you've worked with from radio promotion, Radio Disney. Wow. I mean, the list is endless. But
yeah, I started with Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine, booking bar mitzvahs and weddings and any number of other opportunities.
Come on, everybody, do that comedy.
That's right.
I interned at TK Studios with lights of Harry Wayne Casey, better known as Casey and the Sunshine Band. Supported career development from everyone from Britney Spears to NSYNC, Sinead O'Connor when I was still on the radio, on the record side of the business.
Amy Grant.
Did marketing at Amy Grant. Did marketing for Janet Jackson, Rhythm Nation 1814 tour. Launched probably, or at least was a first stopping point, not only for the boys and so many of the other Disney artists, but Justin Bieber, Taylor Swift, some of the biggest artists as we know it today.
Yeah. I love that I have to ask you to say those things.
That's pretty legendary.
Legendary. I'm going to milk that for everything it's worth.
Oh, here we go. There we go.
Oh, boy. On that note.
Yes. On that note.
A little cheesy.
Oh, I love it. It's hilarious.
Moldy oldie.
Well, I'll never forget, quick aside, that when...
I'm sorry, I just got that.
It took milk, me a second, cheese, but
I just got it. Go ahead, Olivia, sorry.
Yeah, cheesy. Well, no, I was just going to say quickly, it was so funny. One time, I forget whatever I said, but with Nick, I made some pun that I was obviously very proud of, and he was just kind of like, you're hanging out with my dad too much. Never too much, but that was where
I
got it.
Well, and now they're dads and they're telling dad jokes.
Yeah, it's like
I did that.
I gave you that.
That's right, that gift came from me. Legend.
Yeah,
Dairy.
Wow.
So thrilled to have George has come on in the last year and helped in so many ways, and he can tell you his journey, but George is with us in operations and strategy with the Jonas Group, and thrilled to have him. So, George, tell us about you.
Sure, absolutely. And it's an honor to sit at this table, especially following yourself, Phil. I mean, that's a... But I would say that my travels, my journey has been consistent with trying to make a career in the entertainment business, which I'm sure we can all here agree is one of the most challenging things. The entertainment business is unforgiving at times. It's extremely difficult to get anywhere. So when I've tried to pursue a career, oftentimes I've found myself working in other industries to try and make some kind of a living for myself. With that, I had come to meet Kevin and his family at the very humble beginnings. This is late 2005, early 2006. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, the shows were much, much smaller than they are today. And
we've laughed about the fact that between your band and the boys and the crew that we travel with, most shows there were more of us than there were people in the audience.
Absolutely. And these are the humble beginnings of the band members loading their own equipment and just the earliest iterations of...
You don't do that anymore.
But it was nothing shy of a true honor and a blessing to see those early days. And to then follow with your family for what was actually three in those days, national tours, and be able to play, I served in the capacity of a drummer in the opening band for the Jonas Brothers, and then left right around the time where Camp Rock came into the picture, and I did a little bit of work with Demi Lovato and so on and so forth under Kevin's guidance. And then took about 15 years after that to learn a deep sense of corporate strategy, corporate finance in a very, very unique business model from a globally recognized, I'll call them a consulting firm, just for ease of description here. But now to find all of these talents coming back and being able to work with yourself, Kevin, and everyone at this table, really, really happy to be here. And thank you for having me.
Well, really cool. Thrilled. Yeah. And George was one of the few that actually was in the red van with the trailer that we traveled around in. And when we reconnected, he brought me a replica that you painted, this little, yeah, like you painted a replica of the red van, and I was so emotional. And
that's
it
cool.
Sits at my desk and behind me at my home because it's always there as a reminder of those early days, because that's really, that's the perseverance, and getting through that is probably the best part. It's the most challenging. I mean, those were the times where if we didn't sell t-shirts, we didn't have gas money to get home.
Yikes.
And so we had to do whatever was necessary to just try to survive long enough. And we all were sacrificing, and we're saying to the band, like, hang in there. If you're hanging there with us, I believe there's something around the corner. But thank you for sticking in there. And this team, we've lived a lot of life together. So what we're going to do throughout the day today is we're going to just throw out some topics and give our opinions. We will regularly do this where we as a group or a collection of the group give our insights. And we're going to do that today for you. I'm sure it will be life-changing. You'll never hear anything like it on any podcast anywhere else in the world. Only we have this wisdom. So stay tuned. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to start with you, my friend.
Keep it clean.
You are verbose. Over to you.
Yes.
Okay, first question.
Yes.
First artist that made you love music?
Ooh. Honestly, it's probably Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant.
And why?
And then you worked with them.
Mm. Yeah, then that was the freakiest. Bro, when I was on with Amy, went out on the road with us, and I had my in-ear monitors, she grabbed that mic, and that voice was coming through those monitors while I was playing drums. I about freaked out, and it took me a second. It took me a second.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I kind of choked up.
No, that's amazing.
And it was Lead Me On.
CCM album of all time.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That album rocked my world. I was like, holy cow, the girl that sang like, got my father's eyes, comes out with like gut-wrenchingly deep songs that just rocked my world.
Yeah, but Michael and Amy for sure.
Aww.
Wow.
Okay.
First artist that made you love music.
I mean, I'm going to say, just because it was the first, I was the youngest, younger than Coldplay.
Yep.
Oh.
I grew up listening to so much Coldplay, and it just like always takes me back to like being with my mom, and like I to this day, like when you said what's your favorite song, like I'm like, oh, I feel like I know, it's a song called Army of One by Coldplay. But then that wanted me to, the artist that made me want to go into the music industry would
I didn't
be,
ask that yet.
Oh.
I may or may not ask that. Rapid fire.
Sorry.
Next.
I should be prepared at this at this point, but I grew up in a very music house filled household.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really more the classics.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Frank Sinatra,
It
was Louis Armstrong, it was, you know, what my parents,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Mathis, and let's go sort of on and on, that I just had this deep love for music, didn't, to your point, know that it was something that I desired to pursue. It wasn't that moment yet.
Awakening
but
your soul.
Yeah, it was certainly filling.
It woke you up.
Absolutely.
That's
and,
cool.
And narrow it down to the one of the classics.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that's hard for me too.
That's out of bounds.
Okay, I accept that because I'm wired that way. But for me, that question, mm-hmm. is beyond easy. Andre Crouch.
Ooh, Jesus. Wow.
The gospel
is the answer.
Jesus is the answer. And my tribute, come on, world. How can I say thanks for the things you have done for me? And that just gospel. Like,
your voice though, Kevin.
Things so undeserved, yet you give to prove your love for me.
Yeah, like
voice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amazing.
Next.
Oh.
Yes.
What was the lyric that you heard that made you want to be a songwriter?
Whoa.
That made you go.
Okay.
That made you go, not that's cute, that's sweet, but how does somebody write that?
Okay, so for me, again, it's Michael, but it's Wayne Kirkpatrick.
Mm. Yep.
Wayne,
the lyricist,
wrote the lyric,
He's not just a lyricist, but he wrote for Michael.
Yeah, I Hear Alicia was about a little girl that died. And the second verse is, into every life a little rain must fall, and losing one you love is like a storm, but the storms are passing. So it was hopeful, like it's, you know, like what happens to you in life is horrible, but it's not going to stay there.
Yeah, the storm passes.
The storms are passing.
Wow.
And I remember writing that lyric on my desk when I was 11th grade in high school. And I thought it was just so amazing.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Wow.
That's it. And what a great example.
Yeah.
Because Wayne Kirkpatrick,
he's the bomb
beast.
Diggity. Yeah.
He wrote Eric Clapton's big hit.
Change the World.
Change the world.
Yeah.
Can I answer that question?
Oh, yeah.
Even though I'm not a songwriter.
Love music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet I feel so simple.
Yeah.
Having given that sort of setup.
Uh-huh.
Because the first thing that comes to my mind is the lyric, Betcha My Golly Wow. When I heard that, you're the one that,
yeah.
I had waited, and it was like, holy cow. This was like a mind-blowing. Putting those words together and making them a lyric just was like beyond. And then people all over the world join hands. And the syncopation of that, people all over the world join hands.
Oh, yeah.
Love train. It's like... Holy cow.
Yeah, the power.
And this love for songwriters who are able to take the concepts that many of us have or ideas of and narrow it down not just into sentences, but few words, lyrics that can communicate with such depth, but it's so, chopped up, but so impactful.
Mm.
Blew me away.
That's a great example.
It really is. It's so great.
Simple but profound too.
Right.
I love how both of your answers are on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they both are so. You hear your answer, you're like, yeah, of course. Like it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I might have to cop out on this because there's honestly just so many examples. Are just like
can't let you cop out.
No, but let me tell you.
No copping out.
I'll tell you why I'm copping out.
I don't allow it. It's my room. Yeah. Whose room?
Kevin's room.
Legendary.
I was going to say, I'll just say, like, I feel like I always was writing songs. So, like, it never wasn't, like, a moment where I was like, you know what? I'm going to start writing songs. Like, I think, I truly was just always coming up with little lyrics and melodies. Yeah. So I don't know what really, like, made me be like, oh, I want to be a songwriter. But going back to the Coldplay thing, like, as I'm hearing your answers and I'm just, like, mulling over what it could be for me, the whole song of Yellow, just the way that love song is expressed of, like, what he would do for you. It's so simple, kind of like what you're talking about. Like, where he's like, I swam across, I jumped across for you. Like, what a thing to do. You know? Yeah. I don't know. It's the whole song, really, but that one line always really stands out to me.
I love it. I love it.
Very cool.
I go to La Vida.
In
the same way.
Because I love...
I can't repeat the lyric.
She can.
Perfectly, but, yeah. I hear the something in the bells.
Ring in Roman.
Yeah.
Roman Catholic choir is singing.
And it's just, come on, really?
Yeah.
Their lyrics, what I love about them is how whimsical they've remained and yet so commercial and epic. It's like those,
They're stadium.
Exactly.
I mean, they started worthy of stadium.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember so specifically, I can't tell you the year, but... They're too young, kind of, but Paul Davis, I Go Crazy.
Yeah, I actually just added it to
What song is that?
To a playlist.
When I look in your eyes, I still go crazy. That old flame comes alive. It starts, but the second verse, when the second verse hit, there was a lyric, and I loved music, and I didn't write. I was just a little kid who could sing. And the second verse starts, you say he satisfies your mind, tells you all of his dreams. Yeah. You know how much that means.
Yeah.
I know how much that means to you. You say he satisfies your mind, and I went away going,
Like, what does that mean?
You've talked about this song with me before.
Oh, and no question, because I'm intrigued still with, there's something beyond looks. There's something beyond infatuation. And here's a guy who clearly loves this woman, and he lost her because there's another person out there that intrigued her intellect. I want to be that guy.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
And I remember going, holy cow, I want to be that like intellectual guy. I want to be the one that moves people beyond the flesh, beyond just the simple. I want, and awesome. it's my mark of one line that can penetrate.
Right. That's good.
Okay, take
that's
a deep
a
breath.
Really good one.
We can talk about that for a while.
I know.
Oh, I know.
Because we hadn't even hit Bryan Adams.
No. Oh.
When you love a woman, and when you can see your unborn children in her eyes.
One of the best lines.
Really love a woman.
You know you've really loved a woman.
Isn't that amazing, though?
See her unborn children in your eyes.
I can listen to that.
What a great song. Oh, my gosh.
Keep going. Well, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, if you had not have fallen, I would not have found you, angel flying too close to the ground.
Yeah.
Willie, my man, Willie.
Bring it
okay,
in Willie.
So, all right, I'm going to go just rapid fire.
Boom.
Right?
Sorry, we'll be more.
Famous male artist for you. Go.
Prince. All right, I'll just stop at Prince. See, that's hard, bro. It's like, you ought to give me categories. Or top five or something.
If I gave you categories, we'd be here. Right. You know, there would be
no. All right, I'll call Prince.
Prince.
Yeah.
Favorite, and because?
Just the creativity, the brilliant songwriting, the production. To me, he's like a whole package.
Yeah.
And one body.
Yeah.
Great singer, 4-octave range, great melodies.
Incredible
lyrics.
Dancer. I was dating a dancer when he came out with like whatever that first song was, the car song. Like,
yeah.
And he like was playing, singing, and went and did a split, and I lost a girlfriend. Like
he
that.
He satisfied her mind.
He sure did satisfy her mind.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the biggest, the best.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Curveball. I'm gonna say Ryan Tedder.
Ooh,
I was gonna
like
say
Tedder.
Chris Martin, and then I was like, I can't do that again. But also because just how many, you know, other. I just also saw One Republic play the other day, which was incredible. I've never seen them. You know, and he's just kind of casually like, and then I wrote this song. You know, and it's Halo, which I knew, but a lot of the audience is like, oh, had no idea. You know, Beyonce's Halo. So
and
he started listing like, oh, and I've worked with. Oh yeah, I mean, come
sucker.
On. Yeah.
Cool.
And you could go on and on. And plus, I just love his again, it's similar to Coldplay in that kind of like epicness.
Mm-hmm.
But his voice, I mean, hearing him live for the first time just the other week,
amazing,
just jaw dropping.
Yeah, the range.
Unbelievable. So effortless, too. He's in like a hat and a t shirt, you know, and he's just like.
And he satisfied
piano.
Your mind.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, I said, keep it clean, guys. Keep it clean.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, go.
Wow. See, when I get extra time, I get to think about it a little bit more.
Yes.
Now I come up with all kinds of answers. If I have to narrow it down to one, it's got to be Jackson Browne.
Oh. Favorite Jackson Browne song. I got to do that.
Favorite Jackson Browne song. Oh, boy. So many. But The Loadout.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite too.
It's got to be.
That is definitely my favorite. I love that song.
I love that song so much, and it ended every middle school dance in Belmont, North Carolina, with, oh, won't you stay? Okay, love. Okay, there is hands down, no question. Solo male artist.
Okay.
Is Willie Nelson.
Mm. Oh.
For you? Really?
Yeah.
There's not it's not even close.
High as a kite, Willie Nelson.
I'll give you one Willie Nelson story that it deviates from our quick theme. I was consulting at a label. I'm walking through Manhattan And I look up. I'm carrying my briefcase. I'm in a suit. And I look up, and Willie Nelson is crossing the crosswalk in front of me.
With a haze of smoke.
Usually. And I look up, and it's like, Willie. And I had an out-of-body experience. Like, I woke up in the middle of a four-lane road screaming, Willie! And I was running, and I went, I'm a grown freaking man. And I was like, and he was running away from me. And I freaked out, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't.
Did you catch up to him?
No, I stopped cold. He ran away from me, and I shared that story with Lillian Matulik at Hollywood Records, and she got in touch with him, and he wanted me supposedly to be on his, like, Sirius XM show, and
nice.
I was like, I can't. I can't know. If I meet Willie, I don't know. I want to stay healthy.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I don't have man that crushes, but so I probably do have a man crush.
Funny.
He's you say
sorry.
He's
sorry. You did it to me.
How'd you go there? How'd you go there?
Oh, okay. I deserve that. Okay.
Anyway, that is so funny.
I wish I was joking. You know, you could say you made that up. Hmm. And I went, this is what happens to those Jonas fans.
They just lose it.
Snap. Well, I've seen those fans like run over New York City police. Just they lose it and they run, and there's nothing that can stop. But I was doing that too. I scared the crap out of Willie Nelson. I mean, he was moving fast away from me, and I was standing in the middle of traffic. Okay. Favorite solo female artist and why? Go.
No, you're first.
Oh, come on.
You gotta
I like to
okay.
She has to go first.
Okay.
Solo female thing.
Solo female artist.
Okay. I don't remember when we were in London and we saw the Carole King musical, Beautiful. Oh, I think seeing that and that whole story played out and that narrative, I just never been the same, you know, in thinking about her. I think.
Just ask my wife.
Right.
Favorite album of all time, Tapestry.
I mean, those songs, and just knowing her journey now through watching that or seeing that narrative.
That's my first crush. At 7 or 8 years old, I was like, and again, I don't know, at seven, it's not anything other than something clicked in me, like, she says it, and I want to do that. I want, like, everything about her. So yes, same for me. Carole King.
Oh, amazing.
Yes, I bow for no one, but Carole King.
I would have to third that, actually.
Wow. Yeah,
I told you, folks, we only bring discerning people here.
I started a trend.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't...
Mix it up.
I can't even think of... I know that's hard. It's crazy for me, but I can't
think. Favorite female?
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, Whitney is the only one that kind of comes to my mind. Okay.
Yeah, but
that's a great answer. Yeah.
Whitney, I mean, there's some...
Love CeCe Winans.
Love.
One got me speechless. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Now, when was the moment that you said, I have to be in the music business? What prompted that?
I know that.
I do too.
I don't think there was ever a moment. I don't think I understood what that was when I started. I knew that I had to, or I hoped to, pursue something in music. I didn't know I had started as somewhat of aspiring, desiring artist, but I just, you know, loving music as much as I did, and I've been so beyond blessed to pursue and make a career out of it my entire life. My father, who I'd lost when I was 13, had, even in those short years, instilled the fact that if you were able to pursue something that you loved, that you would never feel like you'd worked a day in your life.
Love that.
And that really stuck. And I did play sports. I wasn't great at them, maybe not even good at times. But music was something that I just was all in. I didn't know how. I look at, you know, someone like Olivia, who's, you know, a good deal younger than I am, going to school at a point in time where the opportunities were so vast. When I started school, I had an opportunity to pursue a music teaching degree, but that was about the extent of it. I liked my music teachers. I didn't want to be a music teacher.
Right.
And that was not going to give me the opportunity to perform it. That wasn't going to give me an inroad.
I didn't want a music performance degree.
Right. No, same here. And yet this guy goes to Belmont, you know, which is, you know, built on all kinds of music programs and all kinds of opportunities to set students up for potentially a career in this industry that, was an industry certainly all those years ago, but there wasn't a path to it.
Right. That's so good. There's so many nuggets in there that I'm going to pry out later. You know that.
I know. I guess for me, this is sort of funny. It's sort of like I said, I've always been like, I've always been writing songs, you know, as long as I can remember. And then also, you know, when the iPod, you know, came out with the headphones, like I remember I would take a headphone out and put it back in and listen to what instruments were panned to each side. Yeah. Like I would spend so much time doing that. It was so interesting to me, like what they, those production decisions. But then also just, I also spent so much time listening to songs and learn teaching myself how to play them on piano by ear.
Oh, that's cool.
That was like my favorite hobby, like just teaching myself just by listening, not like even the tutorials or anything, just listening and playing that out. And so that was, but when did I figure out that I wanted to actually like pursue the career? My first concert was a Hilary Duff concert, very cute. And I remember seeing her, watching her from, you know, like way up in the top, and she's all the way down there. She's so tiny, you know, like running around the stage and singing, and like the feeling that I was feeling watching someone, you know, up there and the songs and the whole audience connecting and singing back to her. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to do that. And what's awesome, even not having been a headliner, I totally did that.
Absolutely.
So.
You have done it around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they call me Livy McGuire because, you know, she did her whole, like, Lizzie McGuire movie where she goes and tours in Europe. Or not tours in Europe. She does a show in so it's funny.
That's, yeah, I love that.
You know, for me, my story is similar. Like, it wasn't just one moment, but I remember reading album credits, like, when I was 10, learning all the names of the people that put, you know, where they recorded, all the studios, all the producers, all the engineers. Mm-hmm. All that, and just for me, it was never a doubt where I was headed.
Yeah.
Even in my own mind, I just always knew this is where you're headed.
Yeah.
Love that.
So I got a question for us.
Oh. Wait, I have to answer this quickly.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right.
Okay, so I did that.
Yeah.
I didn't know why. I would watch every award show, write it down, cross-reference it, kept it, met the people later, knew what they'd worked on.
Right.
But it was actually a discouraging trip to Nashville. I had...
When you did your record?
When I did my first, like, country music record.
And I was there.
Wow.
You were there, and you remember I was really discouraged, but it was a realization. And there were many moments, again, that led me to, like, I want to do this for all the right reasons, to help people. And but this was a trip where I was able to do a record. I had a short amount of time to do it. I had basically strep throat when I left. My throat was a wreck. But I came into the studio, and the producer that we hired did an incredible job, but I was a nervous wreck because it was all so new to me. At that level, and I kind of played one of the songs down at the piano, and they walked me in. The first thing they said was, you know, Carole King played this piano on Tapestry, and it was just, and so I'm playing the piano emotional anyway, and I'm just doing this, and I played it down, and I said, would you like me to call out the chords at the end of it? And the guitar player said, no, I got it. And I kind of went, oh, okay, was it that simple? And it wasn't necessarily a simple song, but he just wrote all the numbers. Right. They have the number system in Nashville.
Right.
And that was Brent Rowan. And he, like, quadruple scale guitar player that every country, I mean, every country album that came out at that time.
Yeah.
It was him and one other guy, also Brent. And Brent was a beast. And I went, I'll never play guitar again. And I sat down at the piano and somebody else came in, they played, and I was like, okay, I'll never play the piano again.
Oh.
Then the drummer came in.
That was John Hammond.
John Hammond on the drums. That. I mean, it was just like beast after beast after beast. And I said, well, at least I can still sing.
Yeah.
And then Susan Ashton came in to do backup vocals.
Oh, that's right.
Who was a massive Christian singer at the time and came in and sang backup vocals. And they were so inspired and so incredible. And I went, I can't even sing.
Oh, Kevin.
I better go into the business side of this because there are so many great and talented people.
But you're so talented.
But they're like, maybe it's something in me that needed to be in me, but I know where I am, right? I had a guy tell me once, it was a funny comment, he said, you know, you don't really have a great voice, but you know how to use it.
Whatever.
Right? So I'm like, I have a functional everything. Like I can play, I can play, I can sing, I write, and then you say he satisfies your mind is written, and I go, and there's another level, right? And
there's another level in Nashville.
And there's another level. Yeah. And that next level, I don't envy.
Right.
I was a little bit like, oh my gosh, I need another path.
Right.
Because I was pretty practical, always. My wife has said, and I've said this in conflict with some folks, like, one thing you can count on, I am irritatingly consistent. Right? So
Kevin can see the liabilities coming a mile away.
That's all like, I got. And it's terrible. And also sometimes helpful.
Yeah.
But it is that, like, there is that higher level of talent. And when I hear it and I get inspired, when I walked in and you were rehearsing and I went, that's what it is.
Kevin.
Do not do that. But it happened. You know it happened. And I was like, I get this. We have an artist that I heard three notes of a song and went, that's it. First time Joe was in doing his duet and I heard a raw track of Demi Lovato.
Yeah.
And I was like, who is that?
Right.
Wow.
Right. And she was younger and all the rest. But, you know, there are people that are just better. Right? They're inspired. There's something special about them. And those three notes are enough. My antennas go up. And my inspiration now is actually that. Mm-hmm. And so occasionally I get to sing. Occasionally I do things. And I'm not saying I'm a terrible singer. I'm not. Like, But there are the Whitneys.
He's playing here.
And they deserve that space. And that's who I want to work with. Like, whoever the next is, I want that. And I want to be on the cutting edge of bringing that to the world. And that inspires me. You have a question.
Right. Oh. Right. So my next one actually goes along with this is, who's your favorite male vocalist?
Oh, you can't start with me.
Because
I'm going to have to go through my trickle effect of
male vocalist.
I said favorite, it already, Ryan
so,
Tedder.
Oh, so yours
I said,
is Tedder.
I said, yeah.
Ryan Tedder.
Not favorite male artist.
Because I, well, you know, that was part
vocalist.
Of why.
Vocalist. That's vocalist. I like that question.
I mean, that's okay. Why I asked the question.
Yeah. Clarity, artist is one thing.
Artist is one thing. Vocalist is.
You might like Bob Dylan as an artist.
Yeah.
But yeah, almost.
But that was part of
I didn't
of
say
why
that.
I said
we need to cut that out.
No, he's a stylist.
Come on. There you go.
But, yeah, there are other singers. Okay, favorite vocalist. Male vocal.
It's kind of a tough one.
Yeah, because I jumped to the generations as well, because you know this, one of my all-time favorite songs, and I would put him in the vocalist category as well, is Louis Armstrong.
Mm.
So good.
My song is What a Wonderful World.
I see trees of green.
But if it's something more contemporary than that, I tend to go to something that's
classic.
A little, yeah.
Refined.
I was listening and got in actually to a debate last night with our Rachel about Billy Joel, which is I would say my contemporary would be Billy Joel.
Yeah.
I just like the stylings. I like, you know, there's just something about it I feel. And that was the debate last night. To Make Me Feel Your Love, which is originally, you know, a Bob Dylan track.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing it on a playlist. Rachel was in the car. Now, Rachel is slightly younger than you are. And she's like, who is that? I'm like, that Billy Joel? She's like, oh, but that's Adele's song. It's like, oh, no. Wait.
Whoa.
Stop.
Stop
the car.
That's so funny.
This is not Adele's song. Let's not rewrite history here.
I love her version.
I dropped her off a little.
I am so disappointed. We just kicked her out.
Wow. And I went to Spotify and I downloaded the track and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely, it's Adele, but it's not Billy Joel or Bob Dylan. So.
Yep.
That's so funny. I mean, I do love Adele's version. That's, but yeah.
Adele's amazing.
Yes.
But. She's also not a male vocalist.
Well, it's good because for the next generation, she kept the song alive, which
that's
we
right.
love.
Hey. Okay, I think who'll go last? I want Kevin to go last. So I think my favorite male vocalist is Russ Taff.
Woo!
Oh, wow.
Russ Taff, like before his voice switched out. So anyway, that's my favorite.
Mm. That's a great...
I stood and watched an eagle fly. That raspy. I'm good. I have a
microphone. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, favorite male vocalist, and this is one where, Lord, I want to go into like Luther Vandross, yeah. Kenny Rogers.
Yeah. You got to know
Don one. Henley.
Oh, Don Henley's great.
Like, there's a theme. But I actually, this is where probably my favorite of all time is James Ingram.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Just once. Yeah. Oh.
Oh, absolutely.
The, like.
Yeah. Help him, Jesus.
Yeah. And I find a way to finally make it right.
Yeah.
Mm.
I thought you were going to say James Taylor.
He's great.
All great, but vocalist narrows it down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
but there's vocalist and then there's vocalist styling as well.
Well, that's why I like Willie.
Plays, it's a whole nother thing. They're not necessarily, by definition, incredible vocalists.
Right.
But they have a way to deliver a song, and because of the uniqueness of their voice, you know, yeah. It's just a whole
James Ingram.
Wow.
James, well, is there better? Like, it's R&B, it's pop, it's raspy.
Yeah,
it's, range is unbelievable. Like, you...
Not familiar.
I've got some research you to do.
All you have to do...
Or I'll get kicked out of the car, too.
Yeah.
Is his just...
I did not.
The introductory song, and it was Quincy Jones featuring... James Ingram.
Yeah.
Just once.
Yeah. Quincy produced.
Produced.
Title.
And he was the artist producer.
Yes, exactly.
James Ingram was featured, and I went,
yeah.
What is that? Like,
wait.
I heard something. I knew it was Quincy Jones and was intrigued. What is that voice?
Is that? Not who.
Yeah.
Is that what?
No,
went on to a duet. Don't remember how it was acclaimed at the time with Linda Ronstadt.
Ah.
I don't remember that song off the top of my head.
Linda Ronstadt?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to find it.
I don't remember that.
He also had Find 100 Ways.
Yeah.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Woo.
Okay, honorable mention.
Oh, that's a good idea. Honorable mention.
Honorable mention.
Oh.
Michael McDonald. Is my honorable mention.
Yeah.
That gets
that's...
I I go back to Chris Martin. I mean, I know, I'm sorry. My examples are very pop, but that's my,
no,
you know.
I love but Chris Martin.
I don't know if I look at Chris Martin as pop.
He's broader than. Thank you. I don't either. But sometimes I get like, oh, Coldplay.
He can do pop. He's broader than pop.
No, honestly,
thank you. I thank you. That's how I feel about it. Too.
Fix You to me is a brilliant vocal.
And absolutely. Talk about timing in the world.
Brilliant vocal.
Honorable mention. I knew he would be your honorable mention.
You got an honorable.
Go ahead.
Mention?
Okay, my honorable mention on the male vocalist side. Because of his impact in my life.
Yeah.
Barry Manilow. Mm.
Barry Manilow.
I was about to suggest that might even be mine.
Oh.
But I do go to, and I'll take your lead on how it impacted and inspired my life, was Donny Osmond.
Uh-huh. What? Soldier of Love?
Long
yeah. That. Talk about
that,
a vocalist
that was chapter,
as a kid and a young a teenager.
I really remember yeah. Donny Osmond. So
that's chapter two.
Chapter two, and it was great.
Carl and Evan.
That's right. They did Nick's first solo project when he was like 11, 12.
Yeah.
Early Donny Osmond.
Absolutely.
And Osmonds in general.
Yes, without question.
So unbelievable. There could be so many honorable mentions, like
Michael Jackson.
I mean, of course,
kind of an unfair question, but I wanted to throw it out to this august body.
And this will have to be our last.
Okay, right. Go ahead.
So, for me, and I'm going to give my answer with the question to set it up. My favorite moment.
Ooh.
Is standing at a soundboard where I, you know, typically the front of house is back. So you have the stage, a crowd in front of you, a crowd around you. You're at the soundboard. And when you hit that moment and there's that connectivity where it becomes one.
Yeah.
And the artist is pouring out affection and talent and the audience is pouring back affection and admiration.
Yeah.
And it just combines, and there's something so kismet, so magical, that I just turn around and cry.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the moment. If people ask me, what's your favorite memory? When did you know it would be big? Got a ton of those. We'll talk about that. That's the moment for every artist, where I just go, I love this life.
Yeah.
This has purpose. And I get so emotional. I don't care who the artist is. When it's my kids, that's a special added thing. I don't care what artist it is. When you know you've had a small part in that piece, that connection, and you turn around and people are crying and they're fainting and they're laughing and they're joyful and they're hugging and tears are rolling. And it is the reason I do what I do.
Yeah.
What's the moment that takes your breath away? That you get to live in this.
Nice. I've been asked a similar question that I'm prepared for in the past. I've often wondered, from an artist's perspective, what that moment is of connecting with an audience where they're singing your lyrics back. Mm. A moment that I'll never really fully sort of comprehend, but sort of building upon what you just said, being part of something so much bigger than you could have ever achieved and having that connection and impact, knowing that you played a little part in helping bringing that moment about, that pursuit of dream, whatever, and I've been really blessed to have many of those, but it is that concept of, and again, you know, being part of something so much bigger than I could have achieved by myself.
Love it.
All right.
I, this is my favorite subject, really, that we've touched on. You guys both described it so perfectly. From the lyrics, I mean, that didn't start immediately for me because, you know, as an opening act, at first people aren't singing your lyrics back. I remember the first time that happened. It's absolutely shocking to see. But there are a couple. One is, I know you remember this vividly with me, was my second show. It was right after the opening night of the my first tour. It was in Del Mar, Del Mar Fair in San Diego. And it was like everything from the first night where I was so nervous I couldn't even really enjoy it. And it went fine the first night.
And I gave her like, look, I've done this throughout my career as a manager. I'm going to give you notes. Don't take it personally. Here are things that you should look at. Here are things you should do. And I'll say this, and I've said it to you personally. Never had an artist that, part of it might be, you know, you are the intellect you are, but you absorbed it. And somehow executed it second show, and it went from that was a good show to pandemonium. She like clicked in, every note was there.
I improvised in what I was talking about. I'm always most nervous about talking to the audience than even singing. And it was just,
I was fighting off like security guards that wanted pictures with her and trying to cozy up to her. I mean, it was like insane trying to get to the sound booth.
And that's even after, because I'm talking about the onstage when we were in the moment of the performance where it was just so fun. That's all I can say is it just felt like, oh, I'm not nervous. I'm not concerned about what's happening. I'm just having a great time. And it's that connection. Yeah. Second thing, just really fast, I'll say is this was the Happiness Begins tour with the Jonas Brothers in the UK. We were in Glasgow, and it was this amazing arena. I mean, it's really, this arena, the way it is, it's just really tall, so it just feels huge. And that night, there was a girl who all the fans in this tour were tweeting about, this girl who had actually passed away, like, very close, right before the show, and she was supposed to be there, and her best friend was going to be there in the front row. And so I, you know, and just reading these tweets all day before the show, it's like, what can I do? And I kind of felt like, am I stepping on toes? Because obviously it's not like she's a fan of me, she's a fan of the Jonas Brothers, but as a big Jonas fan, I've always feel like I really connect to those audiences the most. So you know, dedicating a song to her and having everyone, you know, put the lights up, which I always ask people to put the lights up, and seeing those arena, you know, lights from the stage is this incredible feeling. But just that night, knowing that it was like for this girl, Lucy, I mean, I totally started crying, you know, while singing. So it was not my best performance by any means, but just that connection is really, was really, really special. I keep in touch with her friend, Nicole, you know. It was
so good.
Yeah. So
I remember that.
Yeah.
So for me, two quick things. The first time I played drums for Michael W. Smith was at a stadium, Indianapolis, RCA Stadium with Billy Graham. And it was 70,000 people. It was also carried on ABC, CBS, and NBC, so there was another million. So when I stepped on that stage behind the drum set, really for the first time, I'm like, okay, this isn't a dream anymore. You're here. Yeah. And I knew, like, I had leveled up. And then fast forward to the first time I was at a show where the Joe Bros did
When you look me in the eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And all those people, 20, 30,000 people were singing.
And you'll see it again tonight.
Singing that song. And I was just like, okay, now you're having an impact. You're beginning. Right. You know, your music is touching someone. And then when they're getting married to it and they're getting engaged to it, really touching. That's the part I love. Because when you're in the middle of it, in the skill development stage, and you're working hard and you're grinding in the studio, and then a lot of times those folks don't get to see the impact that they're really having. But I was able to see it in that moment, and that was beautiful for me. So,
well, thank you guys. This was fun.
That was fun.
So fun.
Therapeutic. I should have to pay you because my therapist, I've paid a lot of money for this very thing.
Oh my God.
I'm going to be a therapist.
It's group therapy.
You just opened up all of that emotion.
All of the people that I didn't mention.
Yeah.
The guilt we feel for not.
Because of course we're all going to leave here now thinking about these questions in different ways and how we would have thought to answer them, and if we'd had any longer time, what other names we would have come up with or songs and what have you.
The lyrics one is going to really.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
And until next time, remember to tune in. Please subscribe. Please rate. Please share. We're just trying to do something that can hopefully pull you into our world.
That's right.
We appreciate you guys so much. Thank you. Bye-bye.